Central Monday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Mobile Kintec studio at Rogers Arena. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Yes, here at Rogers Arena, the site of the Canucks penultimate game of the regular season. The Canucks and San Jose Sharks do battle tonight.
Yeah, only two left. It's bittersweet. Yes. You know, it's bittersweet. It's always a long season, and it's always fun doing this job, and playoffs would be great.
Yes.
It's kind of like, okay, finally the season comes to an end, but it's also sad the season's coming to an end.
We had so much more hope for this season.
Yes.
There was an expectation of returning to the playoffs. What an electric atmosphere it was last year, and obviously a lot got in the way of that happening this year, Sat.
Well, to have one more month of hockey would have been great.
Yes.
We got a full extra month of hockey last year.
Yeah, we did. And this building was as fired up as it has been in a long time. But now you're playing out the string with two more games, couple more debuts happening tonight. We'll get to that. Kirill Kudryavtsev and Nikita Tolopilo is making his first NHL start between the pipes. Thatcher Demko shut down for the year, as that's kind of been the theme over the last couple of days. When we get to the Canucks Central Roundup a little bit later on, we will dive into some of the absences and players that are being shut down. Demko is now a part of that. We know Elias Pettersson was ruled out for the remainder of the season as well. Over the course of the weekend, Tyler Myers won't play for these next couple of games. So the Canucks are shutting her down as they get ready to play these final two games of the regular season. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Frank Saravalli. He is a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor. Thanks for this, Frank. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing pretty well as the Canucks go into these final two games. Before we dive into some of the bigger topics, I'm curious from your perspective. A lot of Canucks fans had some had their opinion on it, but what did you make of Yakov Trenin not getting a suspension? Should there have been a suspension in your eyes? How did you see that whole situation play out?
I think so. Look, that's about as dirty of a play as you can have in hockey. I mean, there's a few things that really, really cross the line and put players in danger, kicking someone, any sort of intent to injure, and getting a defenseless player who is down on the ice. I believe, I'd have to watch it again a couple times, but I believe being held back by a linesman, so his hands are tied, and then you punch him in the face again. It's significant, and I believe that Forsberg has not only sustained a concussion, but also has a facial injury as well as a result. And so certainly a tough circumstance for him to be put in that position, that I believe that's something that should have warranted something from the Department of Player Safety. Like, the department has to live up to the name, and when a player is not, in a defendable position, that's something that shouldn't be tolerated.
I'm with you completely, and I wonder, George Parros and his history as being a fighter, I think he has probably the perspective of these are two willing combatants, and they're going at it, and you don't know, it's tough to draw a line of when a fight ends, and I think that's how he's justifying it, because I think if he doesn't come from that perspective, you probably get a suspension here.
Well, when the fight ends, when a player's on the ice, it's the code. It's been the test of time. Like, if you're not, no longer a combatant that's in it, and the linesman has grabbed you, like, that's it. Like, everyone understands the rules of engagement. There are no secrets here, and I am obviously, willing to accept a lot of nuance to the fight code and the fight game that I'll never understand, and you'll never understand. George Parros, having been in it, dozens upon dozens of times in the NHL, obviously his opinion bears a ton of weight. And we saw a pretty similar circumstance just the week prior with the, you know, I guess you'd call it toss to the ice.
Yeah.
In another fight that did, yeah, did not get a suspension. That part, I guess, I could understand a little bit more because there is leverage and a lot of other things involved that I, you know, you don't know about. But this one, I mean, you don't need to play hockey to understand the fight code to know that this was no good.
Yeah, broken orbital bone for Derek Forbert, who's, you know, had a few injuries this year, but when he's been healthy, he's been a really good find for the Vancouver Canucks in what's been an otherwise disappointing season. So looking ahead to the offseason, I think the first big decision that the Canucks make, or big news that the Canucks make, will be with their head coach, which probably happens at some point this week before exit meetings. Not entirely sure about that, but what's your read on what happens here with Rick Tocchet?
I wish I had more clarity on it. I think if you were to ask Rick Tocchet himself right now, that I'm not sure that he'd be able to give you an answer as to how this is going to play out. I think that this has been touch and go. I think that this has been something that's been ongoing for a month plus. And it's something that I think everyone hoped to have more clarity on by this point in time. But Tocchet was so focused on getting this team into the playoffs that that part of it, I think, was put on the back burner for a bit. So that's a long-winded way of saying I don't have an update for you. And that I think that this has the ability to get rather contentious in a hurry.
Well, and I think, you know, obviously everyone wants to get this done as quick as possible. And I think as far as what the issues are, that has to be pretty apparent pretty quickly here as soon as the season ends, right? Like, I think from a directional standpoint, I would imagine he has a pretty good idea about what the Canucks want to do and where they're at. And as opposed to everything else, I'd imagine whatever the issues are, they should become apparent pretty quickly.
Well, I think they're multi-layered. I don't know, Sad, if that's necessarily the case. Like, I think there's the question about finances, for one, right. And I don't think that's the end-all, be-all. I think there's the direction of the team, too, and the competitive stature or status of the team. And then I think there's an overall direction feel about the organization from top to bottom, that there needs to be a commitment that this organization is going to be run in a way that's conducive to overall team success. That starts at the very top, that I think is the other part of this. So, look, I think there's a lot to it, and I think the Canucks, in the end, regardless of the other two parts of it, are also going to have to be willing to pay top dollar for a guy who is very much going to be in demand if he makes it to market. And it can't just be, hey, we're going to slap the option on you and bring you back. That's not a long-term solution. It's either get a deal done, or if not, cut bait.
Well, and Quinn Hughes made it pretty obvious what he would like to see happen in this situation. He's really held nothing back when talking about Rick Tocchet and how much he really likes working with Tocchet. And we've discussed this in the past. Like, Quinn Hughes, you may as well put assistant general manager of the Vancouver Canucks next to defenseman for the Vancouver Canucks next to his title as a
next
member.
Next to MVP.
Yeah, next to MVP of this franchise. So how much does that play into it? It almost feels like, given Hughes's contract situation, that's not something that makes this, I don't know. It just feels like you got to find a way to get it done with Tocchet.
That's how I feel, but that's how I felt last summer when he was heading into the final year of his deal. Why allow this to become a talking point? Why not get a deal done and get ahead of it? And I think at times, the way that this organization operates can be its own worst enemy. And I think that they've got their work cut out for them now to try and piece all this back together again in a year in which, after, to quote Peter Laviolette on the other side of the country, who said last year with last year just about everything went right. And for the New York Rangers, after winning the President's Trophy, nothing went right. The Canucks are kind of in a very similar circumstance, and they've got a lot of pieces to put together that I think when you hear Quinn Hughes say that publicly in front of a microphone, you can imagine how much more vocal he is behind it. And it's not just Rick Tocchet. You've heard, and I've said this and made this point before, and I've gotten crushed by Canucks fans on social media when I say this, but I believe this to be absolute fact, not opinion, that top to bottom, between Rick Tocchet and the rest of his staff, that they have a top five coaching staff in the league. The job that Adam Foote has done with that group on the back end has been nothing short of very impressive. And they love playing for him. So take that for what you will. If you want to look past that and say, hey, we're not willing to come to terms on not just the financials, but the whole package of it, then allow that to dictate for you the rest of what comes after that. Do so at your own peril.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, and hopefully we get a resolution here pretty quickly. Hopefully by the end of the week, but this could drag on a little bit longer than that as well. Now, the other thing the Canucks are working on, seemingly, and not a lot of progress, at least so far, is getting a deal done with Tom Bjelander, their 11th overall pick from a couple years ago, and his season has ended in BU, and we're seeing other guys sign in his situation, and the issue seems to be about bonuses, especially the scheduled A ones. How much of an eyebrow raiser is it that this hasn't gotten done yet?
It's hard to say specifically because I'm not privy to all the details, and I've seen the reporting out there when it comes to the Schedule A bonuses. I know that guys have structured their deals in some pretty unique fashions of late that everyone has paid attention to. I think 1 month ago, a lot of people thought that this was a done deal, and I can't give you a play-by-play of how it fell apart or how we've gotten to this point where it hasn't happened yet. I think even saying fall apart is way too much. A lot of people believe this to be a foregone conclusion not very long ago, and I don't have the explanation for you as to why that hasn't been put together yet.
Yeah, it is an interesting one, and just two games remaining. They could, I guess, also think about, and maybe part of the sticking point could be they could send him to Abbotsford and he could compete in the AHL playoffs, but that would require a PTO with an entry-level deal that kicks in at the start of next year. Frank Saravalli joining us here on Canucks Central. So it's going to be the biggest discussion point over the offseason, and we're probably going to talk about it a ton in the lead-up to the draft. But Elias Pettersson, he has been shut down for the season over the weekend. You know, his injury initially was labeled as day-to-day, and it has kept him out now for – this will be the 11th game, and it will be 12 games total by the end of the season. It's been a really tough year, as we all know. And now the discussion is, you know, what happens with Elias Pettersson this summer? There's already been talk from the organization about really working on his off-season plan for the workouts and things of that nature. Where do you see this headed with Elias Pettersson and the Vancouver Canucks?
I don't know how much choice they have other than to try and work through it, to be honest. I mean, we've talked before about how tough this year has been, how very little has gone right, the frustration, the I think want to be better, the pressure that's been on him with the contract. I think a lot of things have piled up, but I just, me listening to you explain how the Canucks want to be more involved with his off ice in the summer, I'm thinking it struck me as how backwards it's been. Like, you don't typically earn that type of contract unless those facets of your life, those facets of your game, your career, your everything that you put into it are all in line first. That part surprises me. And I know that it was an issue for the Canucks. They felt it was last off season that he didn't arrive ready and that he didn't do the things necessary to prepare himself. And that's not to say that he doesn't have intention or didn't work hard or want to put it all together. Sometimes there's a such thing as, you know, working hard but doing the wrong things, and that's a totally different thing. But to think that that wasn't all put together first, I think I come away with nothing less than surprise.
Well, and it's the first time we had heard that this is an issue, and you're right, that it's been to this extent. And we're all surprised by everything that's happened and that we're sitting here talking about such rudimentary things about him. And you could make the case in some instances that getting cap space is good enough, where if you're clearing 11.6, even if you're not getting a lot in return, at least you get the cap space. But cap space is soon not going to be the advantage, I think, that it used to be, especially with the cap the way it's going up and fewer players being available in the first place. Like, the whole notion of getting extra cap space, does it even have the same value anymore?
It doesn't, because I think there's going to be a lot of teams that also adjust from a financial perspective and say, hey, we're not spending to the cap. I think you're going to see a whole host of teams in subtle ways. Teams that have been perennial spend teams that get to a place where they say 3 years from now.
All right, we lost Frank Saravalli.
Well, we'll try to get him back.
We will try to get Frank back.
The cap teams, space overlord.
Yeah, the teams that were afraid to spend to the cap were like, cut his line.
He said too much.
Yeah, we said too much. We can't have this. Can't have this. Get rid of him. Get rid of him. Dump it. Dump it. Dump it. It is so fascinating, you know, like I can't imagine we get to a scenario where Canucks make a similar deal to the one that LA made with Pierre-Luc Dubois last summer.
I mean, I can't, I mean, I don't know how low the Canucks are willing to go as far as Patterson's value is.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing to me is, sure, create the space just to get the cap space. Like, what are you doing with it?
Yeah. The Kings didn't even create that much cap space in that deal because Kemper's on over $5 million.
Yeah.
But, what are you doing with it? Yeah, you can make a healthy pitch to Mitch Marner maybe this summer if he makes it to July 1.
If he makes it.
And if he really covets the idea of coming to Vancouver.
Yeah, so you're going to spend.
But now you're still without a top centerman on this roster.
Yeah, so you're going to get rid of the centerman to spend $14 million on a wing.
Yeah.
Winger, right? Which is, I mean, he's a really talented player.
Yes.
Maybe you've envisioned him playing down the middle, perhaps, because he could do that maybe with the talent he has. I don't know. But my point being, it's not the easiest thing to do either, right? Like, you don't have these great options. And Frank, you got cut off, as you were saying towards the end, where you're saying that there are teams that have spent to the cap in the past that may draw a line here.
Yeah, apologies. I don't know why the call dropped. But yes, I don't know how prevalent it's going to be in year one, but I think we're going to see it in years two and three of what these already reported cap numbers are going to be and agreed upon cap numbers, because teams are going to be looking at this and saying, we just can't make the money make sense. Unless there's a drastic change in league revenue and maybe we'll see, the increased money from the Canadian rights media deal that will help, but they're going to say, we just don't know how we can balance our books to the point where we're running a profitable enterprise or even close to it with paying out salaries in US dollars. Like, year three of this projected agreed upon cap, you're talking about $165 million a year Canadian. That's an enormous jump from where we've currently been, that some teams just aren't going to be able to do it. So cap space, to your point, that I think is bang on. It's been super important during these last 5 years plus, particularly since COVID. But it's going to change in a big way moving forward, I think.
Well, and like, I have trouble finding out what Elias Pettersson's trade value would even be right now. Is it at a situation similar to Pierre-Luc Dubois last summer, where it's like, yeah, you can take our bad goalie contract for Pierre-Luc Dubois, as we saw with the swap with the Washington Capitals? Is that kind of it? Like, we're taking your bad contract for our bad contract? Is that where we're at with Elias Pettersson right now?
I think we're really not far from it. Look, this is a guy whose value has cratered. There's zero question about that. And I think the bigger question is, from a Canucks perspective, how motivated are they to do something before that no trade clause kicks in? Or are they content to see if his game can rebound, perhaps with a big summer with the proper intentions, that maybe puts him in a better position for success.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then we'll see ultimately what happens there. And I'm with you. I think rehabilitating the player might be the best play and the only play they have here this offseason. Before we let you go, I did want to get your thoughts on what's going on around the league and the fact that we're getting towards the end of the season. And there have been some really disappointing situations across the league, the Rangers being the one that's first and foremost. Which situation do you think is going to come to a head pretty quickly as soon as the season ends, whether it's a coach or management, and that we see some big changes?
Oh, I think there's a lot percolating on the coach front. I think we went into the second half of this season saying, hey, look, we've got an interim coach in Chicago and Boston, and, you know, outside of those two, how many other coaching changes are we possibly going to see? And I think the list has grown pretty significantly. The Rangers are certainly one. I think when you have question marks and the season that the Nashville Predators did, that they're another. I think we're up to somewhere around six. Vancouver is definitely in flux and in the mix, I would say, would be on the list of possibilities for sure. That it's going to be a way more active coaching offseason than I would have envisioned. Buffalo, you can add there too. So when it comes to the manager front, I'd say really kind of outside of Buffalo and the question mark surrounding Kevin Adams after year five of his build and no playoffs to speak of, that I don't know if we're going to see a ton of change on the GM front, but there may be a couple surprises.
I also wonder, too, given that there isn't much, not high-end talent available in free agency this year, and you got a lot of disappointed teams like the Rangers. Detroit's probably in that equation, too. The Islanders, Buffalo. Like, are those teams going to be motivated to maybe make blockbuster deals this summer in order to change up their mix? I mean, Detroit's really got to be hurting right now, seeing Montreal about to make the playoffs and given how long they've been out for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and Ottawa, right?
Yeah.
Like, they've been in the same build timeline as those teams. Montreal started way after them. I mean, Montreal went to the Cup final once in between now and then. This is the ninth consecutive spring that Detroit is not in the postseason. I mean, they haven't played a playoff game in Little Caesars Arena history. And you think back to the Joe, like, that was an annual rite of spring. Like, it was hockey town for a reason. They were in it every year. And that part, plus I think the lack of progress and, in fact, backwards progress, not that anyone said it would be linear, but backward progress in this build, that I think is a real big question mark for Steve Yzerman and his tenure, that, yeah, he's definitely going to get a longer rope based on his role as franchise icon, but they got to figure out a way to fix their defense.
Yeah, it's been not good. Edvinson and Sider look good, but beyond that, anybody they brought in from trade or free agency hasn't really worked out for the Detroit Red Wings.
They had a guy, Filip Hronek, has been pretty good.
Oh,
in
yeah,
Vancouver,
that guy
though.
Was all right, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, like, shouldn't have traded him after, like, a 72-hour rage of where this team was in the standing. Sets you back.
Frank, we appreciate the time and the insights, as always. Thanks for this.
See you guys. Have a good one.
There he is. Frank Saravalli on Sports at 650, brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor, your headquarters for your favorite game day beer, wine, and whiskey. More at angryotterliquor.crs. Fascinating stuff. I think, like, the trade market, I hope, is going to be where a lot of things get done, because as we talked about so much, Sat, the free agent market just doesn't really move the needle much.
No, and I mean, you know, you mentioned a guy like Marner even, and we all know that's a pipe dream.
Yeah.
You know, like, even
if he doesn't re-sign in Toronto.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, would he even want to come to Vancouver? Would he even want to stay in Canada if that was the case, given everything that happened in Toronto? So even him, he's a pipe dream. And even as we mentioned, if you're getting ready for your center to sign him, now you have a twofold issue where you have to find two centers. You're looking for one, right? So there isn't a solution that you want, really, in free agency this season.
No.
And we've talked a lot about Sam Bennett. Does he even get there?
Mm-hmm.
And is he the perfect fit too?
50-point center, basically.
Honestly, the more I look at it, the more I wonder about, do they just look at a veteran center like Brock Nelson, yeah, if he's there, and just say, hey, we'll do high AAV, but 3 years?
Yeah.
Or four? You know, he's 33, but, you know.
3x7, and you justify it saying, like, well, it's $1 million less than we were paying Miller, something kind of,
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, I'm not saying they should do that. I'm just wondering, yeah, like, yeah, because even on a trade market, we've talked about this, there aren't perfect solutions. Even some of the guys we have discussed that are intriguing are wingers, like Alex Lafreniere, for yeah, instance, but he plays on the wing. So the trade market is where those types of players are, where you can look to find. There are a couple of centers, though, whether it's Granlund too, and they would be the ultimate stopgaps. And I think Nelson, the more I think about it, is intriguing to them, I could imagine, because he's also the veteran type.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he's the type of player that commands respect, and having that type of player, I think, matters to them. And he fits the bill with size, good two-way player, but he's, you know, he's 33.
Yeah, it could be tough sledding soon, though he's still been a very good player, and he's about to go on a long playoff run, I would imagine, yeah, with the Colorado Avalanche.
Does he even get to free agency, too?
I mean, Colorado doesn't really have – they're one of the few teams that's not going to have a lot of available cap space.
Yeah, but, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they move somebody and then they keep somebody.
Way.
You know, who knows? All I'm saying is even the solutions on the free agent market, maybe there's a center or two, but here's the question. Do you even get a chance to sign them?
It's going to be difficult for the Canucks to rework this roster in a way that sets them up better than they were set up these past two seasons. All right, coming up, the Open on Canucks Central, where we bring you the latest on the team and our take on it. Tom Volander, where is he? That's next on Canucks Central.